Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 195, Around the World in Four Flavors. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking. Getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun, getting inspired. And on today's episode, we're going to be hopping around the world to four different places, and we're going to be looking at four flavors that I have been getting really excited about as we head into fall. We're going to make a couple of stops in the Mediterranean, we're going to head to China, and we're going to end up nearer to home in Central America. We're going to be covering all sorts of flavors, the bright and fresh to the deep, dark, rich umami, to the spicy, to the subtle, earthy. So if you're looking for some new flavors to play around with as we head into the fall cooking season, I think we might have some ideas for you today. All right, but before we get into all of that, of course, there's a couple of minutes of housekeeping here I have to do. And probably the most important are the show notes. So anything I mention in this episode, if you want to find more information about, if I mention some links to recipes or products or things like that, you can head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/195 to get to the show notes for this particular episode. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with me and you'd like to send me an email, you can send that to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I do read all my emails. I am a bit behind in responding to all of them. So I know a few of you have emails into me and I haven't responded yet. So apologies for that, but I will be getting around to it. And I might even just tackle some of those on an upcoming episode. But you know, you can also find me at our private Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, which you can find by heading over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. I'm also on Twitter at TKC Podcast, Instagram, Facebook, all those other places. Everything you need to find me will be in the show notes for this episode. By the way, a reminder, if you haven't listened to the Smorgasbord episode from last time, or even if you had, and you haven't gotten around to entering the drawing for the cookbook that I'm giving away this month, you definitely want to do that before the end of September 2021. So you can get a chance to get a copy of The Food of Oaxaca by Alejandro Ruiz. I'm giving that away. Head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway for the details to do that. Super easy to enter. All you have to do is provide your email address, and that's how I do the drawing and contact you should you win. And if you do win, I'll drop that book in the mail to you, and you'll have a brand new awesome cookbook to try some great recipes from. Let's see. One more thing. Remember, the Kitchen Counter Podcast is a proud member of the Nitty Grits Podcasts out of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans. On the last show, I mentioned, I think it was just right on the heels of Hurricane Ida. I have heard from the folks down there, and the museum did suffer some minor damage, but by and large, got through okay. The staff are all okay. So that's all very good news. Of course, the folks in the Southeast and all over where Hurricane Ida carved a path through the eastern United States could probably still use some help. So if it's within your means to pitch in to the Red Cross or things like that, you know, please consider that. But if you want to see the other podcasts on the Nitty Grits Podcasts Network at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, head over to southernfood.org. All right, I think that does it for housekeeping. Let's jump into this episode, Around the World in Four Flavors. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, I probably have said many, many times that the fall season here in Oregon is my absolute favorite time of year, for not just for food, just for the weather and in everything. I mean, we've had, I don't know, something like 3 months of no rain, which is fairly unusual for Oregon, Western Oregon, even in the summertime. And about a week ago, we actually got some rain. I think we had about 1/2 inch in a day, which was a pretty good little downpour, but we needed it. It was very dry. There's fires and all sorts of stuff happening out here, as you probably have seen on the news. But I have to tell you, as soon as the wet weather came in, I had flipped off of my summer cooking regime, and I'm 100% committed to fall cooking, which to me means warmer flavors, heartier dishes, a lot more one-pot meals, a lot of braising and things like that in my future, and which is great for me because, like I said, that's my absolute favorite kind of food to cook and eat. But, you know, in the United States, when we think of fall flavors, we always think of sort of the same types of things. I mean, the pumpkin spice and the warm spices being, of course, very popular and ubiquitous. Things like corn and root vegetables, of course, are flavors that are very common for the autumn fall season in North America. But I got to thinking about other flavors that I've been using lately that may not traditionally say, hey, it's time to cook fall foods, but I think can be useful for a home cook to add some variety and versatility and give you some inspiration for flavors that you can put to use, not just in fall cooking, of course, but these are four flavors, techniques, recipes, whatever you want to say, call them, that are really getting me excited to get in the kitchen and start cooking. And I mentioned we're going to go to four places around the world. We're going to touch on four very different types of flavors. And I think the first stop we're going to take is we're going to hop to the Mediterranean. And I want to take you to Italy because the first thing I have braised this season was my version of a stracato, which is essentially Italian pot roast. So it's a big hunk of beef. And in my case, I used a chuck roast, slowly braised in its own juices in the oven for several hours on low temperature. And I already mentioned that I love braising. It's one of my favorite things to cook. It's one of my favorite methods of cooking, whether it's cooking meat or poultry or vegetables or whatever. But, you know, one of the characteristics of braising that on the one hand makes it an excellent cooking method for tough cuts of meat and long cooking items can also be a bit of a detriment to the cooking method. And that is when you braise, all of the ingredients that you're putting into the pot that you're braising, not just the protein, but all of the aromatics and herbs and spices and whatever you're putting in as it braises low and slow, all of the flavors in the finished dish tend to come together in the middle. I don't want to say a braise is typically one note, but sometimes it's a good way to describe it. There's not any one flavor that really stands out and shines. All of the flavors meld together and work together to make a delicious dish. But sometimes you want a punch of flavor that, you know, gives you some high notes or maybe some low notes, some bass notes in that dish as well. Now, I've said before, when you have dishes like that, at the very end, a great way to punch up flavor is to add a little acid or perhaps add some fresh herbs. For the first flavor here, I want to talk about gremolata. Gremolata is traditionally a garnish that is made from three very simple and readily available ingredients, and that's Italian parsley, lemon zest, and garlic. Of my four flavors today, it's really the only one that you can't buy prepared, to my knowledge. You really just have to make it yourself, but it's extremely, extremely easy to make. You can whip up a traditional gremolata in just a couple of minutes if you have the ingredients on hand. But the beautiful thing about a gremolata, where you're mincing together parsley, lemon zest, and garlic, is it gives you three quite distinct flavor profiles in one garnish, and it really does brighten up and add a loud note to whatever dish you're putting it on. And you can use it for braises, like I'm mentioning here. You sprinkle a little bit on at the end, but you can use it on soups and salads and really anything where you want to add a real punch of bright, fresh flavor at the end. Now, the recipe is extremely simple. I'll put some links in the show notes, but really all you need is, let's say, about 2 tablespoons of minced fresh flat leaf or Italian parsley, zest from 1 whole lemon, and 1 clove of garlic, all minced together, all 3 ingredients minced together, and you can just sprinkle that as a garnish on your dish. Extremely easy and extremely powerful in the flavor department. Now, you might be saying, well, I don't really like flat leaf parsley, and that's a valid. It can be a very bitter, strong flavored herb. So the beautiful thing about a gremolata, I mean, you don't have to stay strictly traditional. You can sub in or add in or take out ingredients really as you see fit. A lot of people feel that way about Italian parsley, so they might do half Italian parsley, half basil, for example, or all basil in lemon and garlic. They might decide to use other citrus. Maybe they don't want to use lemon zest and they want to use orange zest or lime zest. Perhaps you don't want to just use zest and you want to throw a squeeze of the juice in as well. Maybe you want to add in some toasted pine nuts or a little bit of grated Parmesan cheese. So there's a lot of things you can do to switch up a gremolata to make it a little bit different, and but add some complementary flavors or favorite flavors of yours to make it your own and make it a garnish that will suit your particular purpose and taste. Let's head to the southwest a little bit across the Mediterranean, and let's go to North Africa and Tunisia. So we just left the gremolata behind, the bright, herby, fresh garnish of Italy, and I want to talk about the fiery, peppery, luscious sauce of Tunisia called harissa. So this will be my spicy entry into my four flavors today. But harissa, which is spelled H-A-R-I-S-S-A, is a, as I described, a spicy pepper paste that is usually associated with things like couscous or tagines, but is incredibly versatile. You could almost think of it as a condiment, a flavoring basis for stews and sauces, a dip, something you can mix into eggs, hummus. You can use it as a marinade. It's really, really great when rubbed onto raw, like root vegetables before you roast them. It just gives them a very fresh, peppery flavor. So good. And harissa, I first learned about this. I've never been to North Africa, by the way, so I've never had harissa from the source. But if you're familiar with Paula Wolfert, she's a quite well-known, award-winning food writer, cookbook author, and she somewhat considers her area of expertise the Mediterranean. In fact, in her book from the late 70s, Mediterranean Cooking, which I think has gone through some revisions by now, I first learned about harissa. And at the time that I read about this, I was kind of a chili head, so I really was into spicy food. So it was only natural when I saw this, I thought, oh, this is a different take on a pepper sauce that is a little bit different than what folks in North America might think of when we think of something like, let's say, Tabasco or really many other peppery sauces, which are very acid or vinegar heavy. A harissa is much simpler and, to me, much fresher tasting. Now, you can make it yourself, and I'll share some recipes, and I'll talk about the simple ingredients here. But you can also find many, many varieties of harissa online and in most good ethnic markets that would, you know, cater to the Mediterranean or the Middle East. What makes harissa a little bit different, and it is at the core of the recipe, is hot chilies. Oftentimes, there'll be sweet pepper mixed in as well, like roasted red pepper, garlic, cumin, coriander, caraway, which is an interesting spice. That's the spice that has, you'll sometimes find in things like sausage. It's got that slight black licorice flavor, and olive oil. So rather than the vinegary kick of a lot of hot pepper sauces that we're used to, it's a much fresher tasting sauce. It's relatively simple to make at home. And Paula Wolfert would even say that if you can get a hold of dried New Mexico chilies or Guajillo chilies, both of those are very similar to the types of chilies, whose names I don't have right in front of me, that you would find in Tunisia, in North Africa. So if you use those as your base for your harissa paste, you'd be very close in flavor profile to what a traditional Tunisian harissa would taste like. The best harissa to me is not melt your face off hot, but just warms up your mouth, warms up your throat and tummy, and it's just a wonderful accompaniment to just about everything. Sometimes I'll take a jar of harissa and just dip tortilla chips in it and eat it like salsa. Or raw vegetables like carrots or celery are great, or cauliflower are great dipped in harissa. But a spoonful of harissa paste mixed into your next stew or chili would give it a really fantastic dimension. Now, if you're into spicy food, really into spicy food, you've probably already tried harissa. But if not, you really owe it to yourself to get a hold of some. Like I said, the recipe to make it at home is relatively simple, as long as you can get a hold of some dried New Mexico chiles. And if you have a food processor, it makes it that much easier, or a blender where you can, after you soak the chilies, you just toss in everything together and blend it up, and you're ready to go. And you can add a little more water if you want to thin it out to make it more like a sauce rather than a paste. As for brands of jarred harissa, there's a lot available. I have one in the fridge right now that is Mina harissa, Mina brand. And, you know, just one quick note about the jarred in the bottled stuff, that will have some element of acid in it, typically like vinegar, you know, more as a preservative than anything else. But even this Mina harissa, it isn't overpowering. In fact, I can almost not even taste the vinegar in it. It just tastes very fresh. Okay, so that was our stop in the Mediterranean. We talked about gremolata. We talked about harissa. All right, let's head east to China and talk about one of the most deep, richest umami bombs I can think of when it comes to Asian cookery, and that is black bean garlic sauce made from fermented black soybeans, not black beans like we would think of here in North America, but black fermented soybeans, or dochi. So oftentimes when I'm making things like, you know, stir fry or even teriyaki or things like that, it's just the flavor isn't quite deep and rich enough. But after I discovered black bean garlic sauce, I've probably eaten it before, I discovered it, but I just didn't know what I was eating. And I was reading a cookbook by Ming Tsai, who I've mentioned before is one of my favorite quote-unquote celebrity chefs or whatever. Everything I really love about cooking Asian food at home, I really learned from him. But he has a recipe in one of his cookbooks for black bean garlic sauce using black fermented soybeans. And after I read this recipe, I went to the store and I looked for this, and turns out you can actually buy this in bottles and jars. There's several varieties online as well. So if you don't feel like going to an Asian ethnic market or going online to find the black soybeans, you know, you can just buy a jar or bottle and try it out on your own. All the different brands can vary quite widely in flavor. But we usually have a bottle of it on hand just because a tablespoon of it mixed into your vegetables when you're stir frying or mixed into your sauce for your Asian noodles really, really does add a lot. So anyway, after I learned about this, what this black bean garlic sauce actually was, I realized that it can really add a lot to your dishes. Now, here's the thing about fermented black soybeans. They're extremely, extremely salty. Extremely salty. So you have to use a really light hand when you're using sauce that is made from them. And if you decide on a whim that you're just going to throw a little bit of this into your dish, you might need to back off, you know, adding extra salt or other really salty ingredients, because it can be quite overpowering if you're sensitive to salt or if you happen to overdo it. You know, you don't want to do that. But one of my favorite things to make using this is a twist on Mapo tofu, which, if you've ever had that, you know, it's a tofu dish usually served with some sort of a ground meat like beef or pork, but it usually has a hot chili oil component and usually some sort of a dochi or a black bean garlic sauce component to it. It's extremely rich. It's wonderful comfort food. If you have a Chinese restaurant near you that serves Sichuan cuisine, likely is not, they'll have something like a mapo tofu. But the dish I make, again, I got from Ming Tsai and have adapted it. It's essentially ground pork, tofu, bell pepper, and black bean garlic sauce all stir fried together. And it sounds very heavy, but it's not. And it's just, sometimes I crave just an entire dish of savory umami flavors, and that it delivers 100%. Now, what I haven't tried, but I am going to try, is using black bean garlic sauce in some non-Asian dishes in very small quantities to see just what exactly it can do for flavor. I've not experimented with that at all, but I'm thinking tomato-based dishes, you know, I like to put in anchovy into tomato sauces, a little bit of this black bean garlic sauce, just a half a teaspoon or something, could really add an interesting element to that. Now, as I mentioned, you could buy this already pre-made, but it's not that difficult to make yourself. I've tried it. The hardest part will be sourcing your soybeans, your fermented soybeans. But again, you can find these at pretty much any good Asian market or online. I'll put some links in the show notes if you want to give it a try. The rest of the ingredients will be easy for you to get: garlic, ginger, some scallions, some rice wine, things like that. Not that difficult to get everything else. And you can put the sauce together yourself. All right, one more stop on our four flavors tour. And for this one, we're going to head across the Pacific into Mexico and the Yucatan Peninsula. It's funny because I was just talking to a coworker on chat about, I don't know how we got on the subject of the Yucatan, but we started talking about it, in particular about taking a trip there to see some Mayan ruins, of which there are many. It's a wonderful place for that. But the food of the Yucatan is top-notch as well. And there's a particular spice and spice mix that is extremely popular in the Yucatan and Belize, for that matter, that is just something that North American home cooks really don't come across at all. And I want to talk about achiote, or sometimes known as recado rojo. Now, the spice mixture is called achiote, but that's actually also the name, I believe, of the tree that bears the fruit where the main flavoring and coloring agent of this spice mixture comes from. And the seed from that fruit is called annatto, which you may have heard of. And as a matter of fact, even if you haven't heard of it, it's very, very likely you've already come across quite a bit of annatto. It's a very popular natural food additive because it lends beautiful yellow and orange color to food that it's added to. So believe it or not, cheddar cheese that's yellow, most of that is naturally colored with annatto. Same with butter, same with other things like smoked fish. Anything that needs a little bit of help in the yellowish-orange hue department, food-wise, annatto is a very popular natural food additive. Now, achiote is not just annatto. It's actually a mixture of several spices. But annatto is the primary ingredient, and that's what gives achiote its deep, rusty orange, burnt orange, brick color. But along with annatto, you will usually have something like oregano, cumin, cloves, a little cinnamon, black pepper, allspice, garlic, salt. And achiote does two really, really great things for whatever it is that you use it with. One, of course, is the color component I already talked about. So you get this really beautiful color from things you cook with achiote. But you also get a wonderful earthy, a little peppery, bitter, and even some warm flavors from those other spices that are included in the mix. Now, achiote is typically mixed with some sort of an acidic liquid to make a marinade. In the Yucatan, it would be Seville oranges or bitter oranges. I like to use lime juice with mine. It works great. Now, you can make achiote or recado rojo yourself, but honestly, this is one of those things where I find it's just easier to buy the prepared product. I've purchased annatto seeds before, and they're these tiny little heart-shaped seeds about the size of maybe a peppercorn, but they're hard as rocks, and they are somewhat difficult to work with. So you really need a powerful grinder or a mortar and pestle to work the annatto down. And then, of course, add all these other spices. But I like to buy the prepared variety. There's a couple of brands. I think it's El Yucateco and Del Mayab, I think, is the other one. It comes in a little box about the size of like a chewing package of chewing gum. And in it is a sort of a brick, a pasty brick of achiote. And you can just take a little bit off of the brick and mix it in with your liquid, your acid, to dissolve it. And then use that for a marinade or add that into things like, rice mixtures or anything you want to add that color and that flavor to. And then that little brick of achiote will last if you keep it sealed up for a couple of years in your cupboard, if you have it for that long. So I'm lazy that way. I just like to buy the pre-made stuff. You'll not find it in your typical grocery store, but you should find it if you have a Latin market nearby. And of course, online. Again, I'll put links to all this in the show notes. But some of the famous dishes that use achiote in the Yucatan would be a cochinita pibil, which is a slow roasted pork. Traditionally, it would be like a suckling pig, and the pibil part of cochinita pibil is an earthen pit. So think of burying the hog and cooking it in a hot earthen pit. That's what we're talking about here. But the achiote would be used to marinate and rub all around that pork to give it that flavor and that color. It's also a popular ingredient in tacos al pastor. In Belize, it's the key ingredient to the national dish of Belizean stewed chicken. I love mixing it into rice and other whole grains. You can mix it into flours and things like that for savory baked goods, or masa if you're making things like empanadas or tamales. So achiote or recado rojo. By the way, I was reading that recado rojo, and there's other recados as well, depending on what it is you're making and cooking, is somewhat of a precursor to the mole sauces that most of us are probably more familiar with in Mexican cookery. All right, so there we go. Four flavors that I am going to be putting to a lot of use in the next few months with some of my dishes. I'm curious to know how many of these you're familiar with, how many of these you've used yourself. And of course, these are only four flavors out of thousands of global flavors out there. So I'm wondering what you're excited about cooking with this fall. If there's something out of your comfort zone or out of the ordinary lane, how you cook, if there's something that you're going to be trying out, let me know about it. Send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Also, again, the show notes for this episode are over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/195. There's another episode I'm working on for this fall, which is more of a fundamental cooking knowledge episode, I guess, but I talk about it a lot and I cook with it a lot, but I think it's time we have an episode all about rice, different types of rice, how different varieties of rice cook differently, things like that. So that one, I don't know if it'll be my next episode, but it will be coming out fairly soon. That was inspired by a listener email as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Remember to check out the Nitty Grits podcast down at southernfood.org. And don't forget to enter the cookbook giveaway for the cookbook about Oaxaca. You have until the last day of September, September 31st, 2021, to get your entry in at kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway. Okay, I hope you're as excited for cooking this fall as I am. If you want to share what you're cooking with me, I'd love to hear about it. I hope everyone's staying safe and healthy and getting a chance to get in the kitchen and not just cook for survival, but cook for enjoyment and fun as well. All right, that's going to do it for one more episode. I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. And until next time, happy cooking.